Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Tuesday. We're going to talk some USA football with myself and Keely Yore. Follow on Twitter at Keely is my name. We got some breaking news to talk about. The USC football players making their plea to the California state government, Governor Gavin Newsom. They want to play football. So we're going to talk about the letter that was sent, give you a little behind the scenes of what we've been hearing about that, how that came about, and if it will be effective. We'll also talk about the Big Ten, and as of the time we're recording this, they still have not announced that they're going to be coming back and trying to start mid to late October. That's where anticipating is going to happen. We'll see if that does come to be. We're going to assume that it's going to be going forward, but who knows? It's the Big Ten, and it's been a crazy run over there. If you have any questions or comments for the show, we do appreciate it. We're going to keep them going during the pandemic, during the quarantine, all that stuff. Even if there's no football, we'll keep the shows rolling. Podcast at USCFootball.com is the email address. Or if you would like to call or text us, you can do that too. 424-254-9141 is our number. And, you know, share it with a friend that you know likes USC football. Tell them about the Peristyle Podcast or leave us a positive review. Five-star ratings are always encouraged, especially on Apple Podcasts. That certainly helps us to grow the show. And you know what else helps to grow the show? Having guests like Keely Yore on, because she's really good at what she does. Keely, how are you today?
Hello, Ryan. Thank you for that gracious intro. Doing well. Breaking news is always fun these days. I'm get excited. Back in the saddle of reporting is fun for me after a long break.
We need little things to report on. And this is we weren't recording this because of the breaking news. We were recording it anyway, and it just so happened that we saw the breaking news. So I was like, okay, so that's something we can talk about. If I sound a little different, my apologies. I am not in studio. I am actually on the road, and so I'm at a friend's house right now. So it's kind of cavernous in here. So I don't know if it doesn't sound too bad, but it's a little different.
It's Peristyle Podcast from a tunnel this time. It's like tunnel vision, but not.
Yeah, it's tunnel vision, but not really, because you're not seeing me. But you know, it is what it is. But we'll keep the show going. And we got to talk about the breaking news, like we mentioned at the top, but we want to thank our sponsor, Trader Joe's. They've been great to us over the years. I've been, shopping there for quite a while. There's one near my place in Hermosa Beach, and they've been helping us out on the podcast. I definitely recommend go to the TraderJoe's.com website and kind of see anything that's new out there. There's something I think Keely might like. I believe you can have this, Keely, an organic almond beverage chocolate bar. So they're showing it being dipped in some kind of peanut butter. It looks really good. So it's organic. And I think that means it's okay for you, right? I don't know. Is there gluten in chocolate? I'm not sure.
No, but hold on. You said it was a beverage and a bar at the same time? What is this thing you are describing?
Well, Keely, the big difference is, like, if you are lactose intolerant, you can't enjoy a glass of milk with your cereal or anything like that, you know, milk chocolate is going to be a problem as well. So what they do is, instead of the milk in the milk chocolate, they use the organic almond beverage. So it's basically like a milk substitute in the chocolate bar. So it's kind of cool. So you're lactose okay.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm not really.
Oh, okay.
I don't want to add to your arsenal of things to make fun of me, but yes, I'm kind of lactose free. Milk is bad for me, but chocolate is good. So I'm not a full lactose person. This is probably too much information that anyone wants to know.
but you can check it out. So it's got, so instead of making a milk chocolate bar, it's an organic almond beverage bar. So, anything, usually chocolate catches my eye when I'm going on the website. So that's the kind of stuff I look at. But thanks again to Trader Joe's. We appreciate them, and we appreciate when news comes our way, Keely, because, you know, it's been a little few and far between, I think.
Yes.
Some indeed. Of the newsy stuff that's happening. But today we got a tweet from USC wide receiver Amon-Ra St. Brown, who as of right now is still on the team. Looks like he really wants to play. He sent the letter, well, he tweeted out the letter signed by all of the USC football players to Governor Gavin Newsom, basically pleading to let the team play. Right now in the Pac-12, half the schools cannot practice. So there's no way to really have football if half the schools can't practice. Oregon State, and of course the four California schools. And in the letter, he details a lot of, you know, what's going on with, you know, hey, the other people are playing now. We saw the NFL play. We understand that there was a lot of concern at first. Now we have daily testing, which you can reduce those infections by essentially 100%. You know, he goes into detail about not being able to practice because you can't have groups of more than 12. They can't do anything inside. They can't meet as an entire team. And so he's pleading for the governor to let them play. I don't know if you, the kind of quick summary of everything that was going on there. Keely, what did you make of this, and, you know, maybe give your thoughts on it, and then, you know, kind of what you've been finding out, since this letter came out just a little bit earlier today on a Tuesday.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to unpack here, Ryan. First off, I kind of want to give context to what's kind of happening behind the scenes at USC. So I reported in the War Room on Friday, which is, Ryan, I don't think we talk about the War Room enough on the podcast, I guess, but it's our little insider scoop that we post on the Peristyle. So if there's a deal out there for the site, make sure you pick it up, because I reported that basically USC's athletic department had conjured up the idea to publicly put or behind the scenes put pressure on California governmental entities, so both at the local and state level. So USC's athletic department got in touch with people at the Pac-12, other athletic departments in California, so Cal, Stanford, and UCLA, and basically said, hey, now that we have testing, now that we have the ability to test daily and basically reduce infectiousness by 100% with the ability to test that way, we can kind of move forward. We can push on the government entities to let us play. Because basically, as we've stated so much here, it's not like the Big Ten where it was the conference itself that made the decision not to play this fall. The Pac-12 was dictated by medical, the myocarditis issue that they think they kind of have more a better sense of right now, but also government authorities that won't even let them practice indoors. That's what really forced the Pac-12's hand. And so now that they had a new testing capability around the conference, the California schools basically think now that they can put pressure on California to let them do what they want to do, which is to play. So I report in the War Room that they kind of had this this lobbying arm kind of re-engage with California. They had their first meeting on last Wednesday to figure out their strategy. So I got word that they were doing things behind the scenes. So then now fast forward to Tuesday, and you see Amon-Ra St. Brown on behalf of USC's football players making a very public plea to the governor of California. It just shows you that they're really trying to up the ante right now to put pressure. And so what a source told me was that instead of just making this to-do list, one line on their to-do list for the state, they wanted to really amp up the pressure and make sure that everyone knows that California is being asked to maybe go a little bit more lenient on the California universities who they're putting these different standards on compared to maybe the NFL and the MLB, where they kind of are guided by one guideline. So they're professionals, they can do their own thing. Whereas the colleges, there's so many overlapping guidelines of college campus guidelines and university safety, and can students even be on campus? And so with this new testing capability, the athletic departments are trying to kind of work around all the complications that come with being a university and trying to kind of streamline the process.
Yeah, it's not a streamlined process. And obviously you're going through a pandemic and you don't really know. I mean, this is closed, this isn't closed. There's, you know, lots of questions you can kind of get into. But on the sports side, we're seeing, you know, to see the Rams play and, you know, open that new stadium without fans. And there's a lot of people saying, like, why can't you at least have some fans in there? And, you know, obviously that's not allowed right now in the state of California. They're doing it in other NFL venues. They're not doing it in Los Angeles. So next week we'll see the Chargers play in that same stadium, in a SoFi Stadium. And, you know, obviously the Dodgers and the Angels and the Padres. You know, you're seeing baseball being played But we're not seeing the college sports being played. And that's now that we're seeing, we have had 2 weeks of college football, not full weeks, not flawless weeks, but they're weeks. We saw Power Five teams play. We saw Power Five teams play each other. We saw fans in the stands. We saw games get canceled. We saw games get postponed. We've seen outbreaks. We've seen a lot, but it's happening. And maybe you can make the argument that you can't have college football yet, but it's hard to make the argument that you can't practice. I mean, not only were these other states and schools and programs practicing, but they've actually started to play games. So you can't be that far behind everyone else. It can't be the point where you can't in an environment where they're going to be tested rapidly every day. They can't go out on a meeting. They can't lift weights inside. They can't have more than 12 people in a group. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. And I feel like if you want to make the argument that they're not ready to play yet, I'll listen to it, but I'm not listening to the argument that you can't even practice yet. They haven't advanced this at all. And it becomes very political and we don't want to get into that mess, but I think this is a great, it's a great effort, I think, by the USC football players. Hopefully we'll see some of the players from other programs in California and the Oregon schools, do something similar, because I do feel like at this point you're showing that's working in other states. It's not like the numbers in California are like terrible. I haven't even really looked lately, but it's not like they're, California's a million times worse than, Georgia or something. So I feel like this is, I feel like it's something that could get the governor's attention, Keely. I don't know if you think it's going to be effective or not.
Yeah, I think it will be effective if you have other California schools get involved with this. And from one source I talked to, the expectation is that other schools will get involved, whether it's from the athletic department social media account itself or from their players. It's still kind of unknown, but the hope, I believe, is that other players, entities will kind of put this public pressure on Newsom to do it. Now, there's a lot of things on Newsom's plate right now. California is on fire. There's a lot of things going on. But I think the key here is, I think from Newsom's eyes, there were two hurdles. One, these are amateur players. And two, there was no testing capability. And so when the NFL got the ability to work with a private lab and test its players so that no one who walked through those doors, either for the Chargers or the Rams, and the Northern California teams as well, whoever walked in the doors, they knew they didn't have COVID-19. Whereas with the schools, they were testing on a weekly basis. So there was an opportunity for infections to spread rapidly. Whereas now you jump the hurdle of, hey, they're testing daily. They can control that spread. You can kind of look past the amateurism issue, I think, in Newsom's eyes. And I think that's why USC is pushing so hard. Because the thing is like after Ryan Day for Ohio State pushed publicly really hard on the Big Ten to play, there was a lot of people on the Peristyle and on the message boards who were saying, well, why isn't USC doing anything? Why hasn't USC publicly tried to quote-unquote fight for football? And what one source told me was trying to do that prior to testing and a medical reasoning behind them was pointless. Basically, they said nothing mattered until the testing partnership with Quidel, the new, the testing corp. They said it would have been like shooting a handgun at an asteroid. So for Newsom, it was really down to testing and making sure that the players are safe and there's a way to control infection. So to your point, Ryan, I think that this will have an effect, but whether or not it's a priority is interesting. I don't know if it's going to be a top priority to get college football off the ground when there's other like public crises happening right now.
Yeah, no, I get it. And I think it's going to, the open letter helps, but it's going to come from the different athletic departments as well. I know that the state of Oregon, they were pretty optimistic talking to, I forget the doctor's name, but he's with Oregon State, and he was on a podcast, I think, with John Wilner. He's in the Oregon State Athletic Department, but also is a medical doctor, and felt that really this rapid testing was a game changer situation, and that the government in Oregon would allow practices to happen again, knowing that this testing was going on. Really was the major hurdle there. The government's not talking about myocarditis. That wasn't an issue. That was an issue that really came up on the college level. and the Pac-12 level and the Big Ten level, that seems, you know, some of those concerns seems to have subsided a bit. I guess they're not as big of a concern. I mean, there's still a lot of concerns. There's still a lot of things you don't know. But it's not as big of a concern as it was before. And just the rapid testing, knowing that you're not going to be spreading the disease, knowing that you're not going to have a player that was tested on Wednesday go to practice on Thursday and walk through some meetings on Friday and go to the game Saturday, maybe, you know, having picked up, you know, got the infection, you know, soon after being tested, or you didn't know the results of the test and he was around people for a long time. It really makes contact tracing a lot easier. They don't need the super high tech stuff that you're seeing in the NFL that everyone's wearing a watch. And, you know, you can tell if, you know, where was Keeley? You know, Keeley's wearing this watch. I know she was next to Ryan for 5 minutes at 6 feet, and she was next to Shotgun at, she was 3 feet away from him for 15 minutes, so that's a concern there. Like, they're not going to have that kind of technology, but if you can test every day, cheaply and quickly with instant results, essentially, you can really limit how this disease would be spread. And I think that's the biggest concern, when you're talking about the government. They don't want this, you know, and they don't want any entity, you know, they don't want that huge party to become a huge problem statewide, right? Like there's 300 people at this party and they all go out, everyone gets sick in there, or everyone gets the disease, or everyone gets, I mean, the virus, but then they go back home and spread it around other places. And that's what they're trying to avoid. But knowing that these, even though they're amateur athletes, even knowing that they can be tested every day, you're not putting the rest of society in some sort of danger by allowing them to play. And you're actually making it, you know, safer for these guys because they know what's going on. They're getting tested every day. So it makes sense, but they do need the athletic departments to help. I think most of that help, like you were saying, and you reported in the War Room, make sure you guys check that out, by the way. If you're not a VIP member to USCfootball.com, you really should be. You listen to this podcast. You really love USC football. Make sure you check it out. But they're doing a lot of behind the scenes work. I don't know if this letter, Keeley, allows more, you know, will there be a joint statement from USC and UCLA about, Governor, we want LA County, or, you know, Mayor Garcetti, we need to open things up here in LA County. We can do it safely. I'm curious if this will spark enough that we'll get some more, I guess, open communication and not maybe behind the scenes stuff.
Now, here's the interesting wrinkle that I've kind of picked up through conversations, and you can see this in Amon-Ra St. Brown's letter. He mentions the hashtag We Are United movement, and so USC has always let its players kind of speak publicly about what they want to, whether it's football or social justice issues. And you can see Clay Helton quote tweeted Amon-Ra's tweet, and he said that he's always going to support his players speaking up. What I had learned was that around the time that the We Are United movement happened with the Pac-12, context. Basically, USC's athletic department and California athletic departments for Cal and Stanford and all them, they were waiting for what was called higher education guidance. Basically, they were waiting for California to give hand down guidance as to what they can do at the college level. And they were waiting on that for a long time. Whereas the NFL got guidance very quickly around when they asked for it. So when the guidance came down, that's what helped influence the decision as to, okay, you can't work out indoors, stuff like that. What was happening is as around the time that California was going to release the higher education guidance was right around the time where the Pac-12 Players We Are United movement happened. And it kind of, from what I heard, what the movement was a little bit misconstrued, where it sounded like the California government entities read that movement as, we're scared to play, we don't want to play. And so I was told, you know, kind of, it was a hunch, it's not 100% sure, but maybe California erred on the side of caution and was a little bit more conservative with their guidelines because of what they heard the players saying, rather than maybe being a little bit more lenient on what college players could do. And if you look at what Amon-Ra wrote, he said, Though it may have been construed, the Pac-12 players' hashtag We Are United movement did not reflect any desire to not play this fall. Instead, we simply wanted to ensure that health and safety would be at the forefront of our conference's planning. The movement helped us to secure some important commitments from the conference, such as guaranteed scholarships for those who opt out of the season. We believe the players in the Pac-12 want to play as soon as possible. So if you look at why he wrote that, it kind of matches up with what kind of the conversations I've been having with a couple people where they thought that California ruled a little bit more, not ruled, but handed out guidance that was a little bit more conservative based on what the players were saying and based on the amateurism factor that I talked about earlier. So it's interesting. I think just having a letter and having the players say this, I think California might have more shield, if you will, to go out and say, okay, you can do this, not only because the players are saying they want to play, but also because there's a model in the last 2 weeks that's showing that college football can be played. So I think it's twofold, but it's interesting that little wrinkle in the letter kind of shows you to some of the things that were happening behind the scenes.
Yeah, and that's the letter did come out quickly, and then they merged with we want to play movement. So there was a couple of movements that were happening. But it was sort of put the, you know, it was put together quickly. It didn't have representation from all the Pac-12 schools. USC wasn't represented on the early version of it. And I think that could have been a mistake. I mean, I think it was a mistake because it could have sent the wrong message to the powers that be, and it could have sent a wrong message to the politicians like, hey man, we got our college students. They're being asked to play. They don't want to play. Like, we got to stop this. We can't let this happen. And, you know, obviously that wasn't the message that they wanted out there. So I think if they maybe took a little more time and got everyone on board, you could have come up with something a little more concise, and you wouldn't have confused the people in the conference or people in the government that's like, hey, these college athletes, they don't want to play. The NFL's going, we'll let them play, but we're not going to let colleges. But that, you know, that's water under the bridge at this point. I think this was a well thought out letter. I don't think written by any individual player or anything, but you know, the collective there over at USC, and it would be great if you saw something similar from other places. But if this was, you know, if Gavin Newsom had the time to read this, I think there's a lot of really good points made in there. And I think if he asked his medical staff, hey, if they're getting tested every day, is this going to be a drain on our resources? Is this going to be, is there going to be some sort of threat to the general health of, Los Angeles or Palo Alto or Berkeley or whatever, if we let these college athletes go out and practice? And I think the medical experts would say the answer is no. So hopeful that there's a light at the end of the tunnel, because at this point, like we mentioned, we still haven't heard from the Big Ten as of, I mean, maybe it's happened tweeted while we were talking, but we're assuming they're going to go forward. And it's sort of like, well, real quick, we'll get into that in a second. Was there anything else on the letter, Keely, you want to go on before we kind of talk about the Big 12 a little bit?
Not off the top of my head. I did ask a source what would be the best case scenario going forward now that this letter has been released. And the source said that best case scenario, there might be a chance for the Pac-12 to hurry up and play by the start of mid-November. So that's out there. Not sure if it's doable. That's basically everything has to go right, and the government has to, California's government has to respond, and then Oregon has to follow suit. So it's interesting, but it was floated out there. So we'll see.
Yeah. So John Miller, I think, felt that if everything got going like today, and this letter, you know, certainly could help that, maybe early November, the Pac-12 could get things going. The problem is, you don't have the kind of issues in the Big Ten that you do in the Pac-12 as far as local governments not allowing things to happen. That, you know, half of the schools in the Pac-12 can't practice. So you can't get ready for the season. They weren't practicing these last month or two, and then you could like start fall camp tomorrow and be ready in 3 or 4 weeks. That's just not possible. Like, you have to have that whole ramp up. They haven't had they haven't lifted a weight inside. They haven't had full team meetings. They haven't done anything like that yet. So there's issues in the Pac-12 that don't exist in the Big Ten. When we hear from the Big Ten, all the sources that, you know, the reporters we're talking to and hearing from, it sounds like October 17th is sort of like the date, and they want to try to get in a season that would squeeze them in to the college football playoff. That is the big concern. It's basically, you know, basically pushed by Ohio State, who is, you know, one of the best teams in the country, and they would not like to be left out if it's, if at all possible. It will probably be a shortened season. The issue is, and what I really liked about the early schedule that we got from the Pac-12, and to be fair, the Pac-12 did this right the whole time. Like, they made their decision. You know, they came out with their schedule first, and it was very flexible, which is great. Like, there's, you know, delayed games and things like that. You know, there was potential, like, if you delay this game, you can move it here. You could, there's teams who are playing sort of in pods that they could play against each other and move games that would be easy because they'd have the same bye weeks. All that kind of stuff was built in. And, you know, a couple weeks later, they scrapped it. The Big Ten came out with their schedule later, and then 6 days after that, canceled the season. So now they're, you know, reneging on that. They're going back on it, and they're just really scrambling, trying to save some face. And a lot of it's the pressure from, you know, the Nebraskas of the world. But the Ohio States, you know, that's essentially because they have a chance to make the playoff. They wanted to find a way to squeeze this in. And if the presidents vote that way, you know, they'll have some kind of shortened season, but it's like a, you know, 9 weeks to play eight games. And you could, you know, what if Ohio State, you know, Rutgers has an issue and they miss that game, and like a 7-0 Ohio State team that like beats Wisconsin or something in the Big Ten championship game, they're 8-0. Are they going to get picked into the playoff against, you know, like an 11-1 Alabama team or something like that, that like lost to, you know, Georgia or something, but then won the SEC title? It's going to be really weird to compare, but they're doing whatever they can to shoehorn them in, their season in, to get into the playoff. That is not the concern in the Pac-12. Like, just to be clear, Larry Scott, they're not looking at that. They want to have a season, but they're not pushing forward to try to make the playoff. The Big Ten obviously is trying to push forward and make the playoff. So, I'm curious how it goes. I honestly, Keely, I like the way the Pac-10 is doing it, Pac-12 is doing it better than the Big Ten, and they're not changing their mind and reversing course every, you know, couple of days. They made their decision. I think it was sound. Now it's time to put pressure on the governments. I think that the Pac-12 has to step up and help the players, help the athletic departments, talk to Gavin Newsom, talk to, you know, the government in Oregon, and allow things to open up so they can at least practice and have the option to start a season when they can. Until they can start practicing, you can't really start the clock on, okay, it's going to take 6 weeks to get ready to have a season. That's why, you know, you're probably not going to see anything until late November. I don't see a reason the Pac-12 needs to shoehorn it in like the Big Ten is. I get why they're doing it, but it's not a great look for me from the Big Ten.
Yeah, I mean, credit to the Pac-12. Everything that they have done seems to be in plan with their original press conference of, hey, we're canceling this because of medical reasons, because we're not sure. And now when you are seeing a change, it's because they've had a change in testing capability. They are more confident in what they know about myocarditis. And so they're moving forward as planned, whereas the Big Ten is like, we feel this way. Ryan Day is declaring civil war. And then the Nebraska president is caught on a hot mic. Like, there's just all this madness. So credit to the Pac-12 in that sense. But yeah, it, for me, it seems like the Pac-12's timeline as far as moving it up prior to January is basically to put as much pressure off of the 2021 season, fall season, as far as putting space for the players to recover, rather than the Big Ten, which their motivation seems to be, like you said, participate in some type of championship or whatnot. So it seems like it's not really dictated by that. But for the Pac-12, what are you going to do? Play over Christmas in January? Like, how do you see this working out, Ryan, if it does go that route?
Yeah, I think that's what you have to do. I think, well, first of all, you got to get the governors, you know, on board.
Yes,
and
yes.
Like the LA County, all the different counties, they have different rules and regulations. So you need the governor and you need the different counties to come to the table and allow you to practice. And then at that point, it's going to depend on a couple of things. And one is, what does the Big Ten do? Because the best scenario for the Pac-12 is you had a dance partner, right? Like, yeah, were you, you know, you weren't maybe with the popular kids, but you still had someone to dance with, you know, and they had the Big Ten. They were dancing with the Big Ten. They could have said, you know what? We have finals, during prom. What we're going to do is we're going to have our own prom later on. It's going to be great. We're going to, you know, all our friends, we're going to have them come out and we'll have our own prom. Well, now the Pac-12 looks like they could be getting ditched by the Big Ten, and they're like, I'm going to finish my final early and then I'm going to run over to the prom. You have fun at your prom, but I'm going to go to the main prom. And even though I'm going to be a little late and I'm going to be sweaty and, you know, running for my final, but I'm going to have fun at that prom and I'm going to try to, you know, be eligible for prom king. And that's essentially what's happening here. So that's not going to happen in the Big 12. I mean, in the Big 10. Oh my God. In the Pac-12. There's so many numbers.
So many numbers.
So it's not going to happen for the Pac-12. Now they're going to be, if you don't have that dance partner, you will have more options, because if you had the dance partner, you would set it up so there would be a Rose Bowl type of thing. There's so many bowls that aren't going to be used this year because there's just not enough eligible teams. There would be bowls aligned where you could have the number two teams, you know, play each other from the Big Ten and the Pac-12 and things like that. If that's not the case, it gives you a little bit more leeway where, okay, what do you want to do? Is it just to get these guys some experience? There's not going to be an end of the season sort of fun thing, you know, where you could play in a bowl game against the Big Ten. So do you just do the five division games and then a championship and maybe like some sort of like the number two from each division play each other? Or do you introduce a potential out of conference game for the end of the season? It's like a de facto bowl game that, you know, USC could play Notre Dame again or something. Like, who knows? You could get creative, but if you don't have that Big Ten dance partner, you know, it might put some pressure on the Pac-12 to why are you even bothering? And I don't get that. I think you need to play. If you can play, you can play. And it's not just because, well, you don't have this to play for. Yeah, you're not going to have those kind of things to play for. But I think you're going to give these athletes a real opportunity to show their stuff, to help. If you can get it done by March, if you can do, you know, maybe it's done in February. Who knows? You get the six games or whatever you want to get in. That gives those guys that were seniors an opportunity to show NFL draft scouts what they can do. It gives, you know, the younger guys more experience. There's all those freshmen that are going to be on the team that are basically going to come in, all the 2020 guys, anyone that plays, their eligibility doesn't count anyway. It would at least give them a little leg up on the 2021 guys coming in, because otherwise they would just be mushed together in the same class. They would at least feel like they're a different class because they got some experience under their belt. I think there's a lot of good reasons to play, Keely, if they can do it safely. You know, the issue is they're gonna face more questions. For the Pac-12 is gonna not look good once the Big Ten announcement comes out, for a couple of reasons. One, you're the only Power Five that isn't playing. I think they have legitimate reasons, but you know, that on the surface, they're the only Power Five that isn't playing. Then why are you bothering if you're gonna play late and you're gonna be playing by yourself? You know, maybe it's the Mountain West. You know, you can play games against the Mountain West afterwards. It's something, I don't know. I mean, because they're going to be out here on the West Coast, and if they can start, you know, I think there's going to be some options there, but the options aren't going to be as slick or as cool if it's not partnered with the Big Ten. Now, we don't know if they're going to be able to pull it off or not. We don't know if it's going to work and get them into the college football playoff. And maybe the Big Ten does delay and they start in November now, and the Pac-12 gets their stuff together and they start November, and it's a nice, you know, Big Ten Pac-12 season with the bowl games and things like that. I think that's the best case scenario. It's just, there's so much pressure now for the Big Ten to play right now. I'm just not sure that is going to happen.
Wow. That's a lot to unpack there, Ryan. But yeah, I think.
Sorry. Yeah.
No, it was good. Just, I kept thinking of responses and then you kept going. But I think the main thing first off is, if you're an athletic department in the Pac-12, you have no choice but to try and play, right? Just from a revenue standpoint, you need to put a product out there to even have some sort of keeping things afloat, right?
I think you want to keep the lights on, right?
Like yeah.
You want to keep the lights on. It's not like, well, what are you playing for? It's really like, we need to be able to play. And you'd have, you know, people are asking for Pac-12 after dark. You know, they would love it if, in February, you know, after the Super Bowl, they could catch a USC Oregon game or something like that. I think people would would watch. You know, more college football is better. And you might get like, the Mountain West might not be able to start until like March. So in a situation like that, it would be interesting. You could have college football from, you know, September through May or so. It might be a huge college football season. And you know, people will pay attention to what's going on. But I think it gives some of these guys a real opportunity to show their skills. Yeah, we've talked about a bunch. I mean, did you know who Joe Burrow was before he was the number one pick in the draft and won the championship at LSU? Like, he needed that senior season. He needed those last games. I'm not saying you're going to get a Joe Burrow coming out of USC or Oregon or Washington or anything like that, but there's going to be guys that might not get drafted unless they get that opportunity to show the scouts and then go right into, you know, roll into the combine and all that. And I think that, you know, you get invites to the combine by playing. So I feel like they have to do it. I think there's going to be so much pressure. If they're the only Power 5 team that doesn't play at all, I don't think you'll get dinged as much by playing late at the end of the day. But if you don't play at all, then yes, I think that's going to be a, well, why are they even in the Power 5? It really could be, that would be a huge problem, I think, for Larry Scott in the Pac-12.
Yeah, and I don't so far I haven't gotten the sense that they won't play at all. I haven't fully gotten that sense yet, but the interesting thing is that we've talked about so much about the Pac-12's unity. It will be interesting to see if that continues once, if when the Big Ten says that they're actually going to play. Do you see some resentment come out of the Pac-12, or does everyone understand like where they're at in the Pac-12 and why they did what they did? You know, like, do you still stick together when you're the only one sticking out? You know, it'll be interesting to see for sure. And as far as while we were recording, Chase Garbers, the Cal quarterback, tweeted out, let us play. So I think we're starting to see a little bit of the messaging trickle out.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. Chase Garbers, man, my MVP from last year.
Yeah, your guy.
He's my dude. We talk about him on the podcast with Champions a lot. So yeah, if you don't know Chase Garbers, he's a Cal quarterback. Basically, when he played, Cal won. When he didn't play, they lost. So it's kind of, you would see like Devin Monster, the former UCLA quarterback, go in there and just be awful. When Garbers played, they won. And he got hurt against USC, or didn't play at all against USC?
He got hurt.
He got hurt early in the game, I think.
Yeah.
And they lost that game. Cal did. Yeah. So we'll see. We're waiting for that Big Ten announcement. We're anticipating it's going to be a yes vote to play and probably mid-October. But for the Pac-12, it'd be much better if they're like, you know what, we're going to play. We just don't think it's feasible to get it done early. We're not going to like rush this to get into the playoff. We're going to have a late fall season that goes into, you know, winter or whatever. And, that's what we're going to do. And then the Pac-12 could, you know, then they would have a goal and they'd be like, all right, we're going to shoot for that same time. And let's plan a postseason together, which that hasn't happened. And it's unfortunate that the Big Ten and the Pac-12 haven't worked closer together. It's unfortunate that all the Power Five conferences didn't work closer together, but, that's, you know, that's part of the college football power vacuum that we have. There just isn't, that kind of structure where there's a clear leader. There's no Roger Goodell. You got these little fiefdoms and they have a lot of power. Each conference has a lot of power and they're really not willing to share that with anyone else. So they're going to do what's best for them, not what's best for college football as a whole. And in this case, the Pac-12 would, you know, what's best for the Pac-12 would be the Big Ten waits and plays with the Pac-12. The Big Ten, they'd much rather get into the playoff and get Ohio State in the playoff if they possibly can. So that's where it looks like it's leading right now.
You know, another interesting wrinkle, Ryan, that we haven't even mentioned just because it happened last week after our podcast and there's other breaking news, but Elijah Vera Tucker, USC's basically best offensive lineman, declared that he was opting out and going to enter the 2021 NFL draft. Has he hired an agent yet? Like, could he possibly return or want to return even if he can come back, if there's a season, if there's more optimism? It's interesting. And now what does USC's offensive line look like if there actually is a season? There's so many wrinkles in all of this, but just a tad little question mark is like, did ABT declare to opt out a little too early? But who knows? I mean, he is a draft prospect, so he probably made the right decision overall, but it's an interesting wrinkle.
Yeah, I haven't heard if he hired an agent yet. My guess would be, though, he wouldn't return. I know Ohio State's lost some players even recently, as I think yesterday or maybe today. And, you know, guys are waiting and they're like, you know what? I just, what's best for me is just to move on. Mm-hmm. If the Big Ten would have made better decisions early on, I get it in the Pac-12. And, you know, I don't know. I think the wrinkle here is, you know, Elijah Vera Tucker, it's a big loss because if USC ends up playing games, he was like the savior at left tackle, even though he was moving from, you know, a spot he played well, left guard to left tackle. So you're basically going to have a new left guard and a new left tackle. Well, now it's kind of like you lost two positions on the offensive line now, you know?
Yeah.
And there was no, you know, plan to replace Austin Jackson at left tackle. And it was sort of like a desperation thing to move Elijah Vera Tucker over there. So yeah, it's going to be a real problem. And it's not like the USC's recruited the offensive line well. They've recruited bodies, but there's not like Austin Jackson was a five-star dude. There's no one like that that has come into the program the last couple of years. So it's that's a big, big concern for USC if they do get out to play. Yeah. And you know, the wrinkle, we can get back to that too if you want to talk more about EBT, but
sure.
What do you think that, you know, if you had to guess the next USC player to opt out and enter the NFL draft, who would that have been?
Amon-Ra St. Brown. Right. I mean, and this is what's been really interesting to me is because I heard very early on that Amon-Ra St. Brown was eyeing opting out from a very early standpoint, from an early point in this whole, is there going to be a season? Is there not going to be a season? Oh, the season's canceled, et cetera. And so his name kept coming up. And then, so you see the J2Feles opt out, you see the ABTs opt out, and then you see Amon-Ra St. Brown be the first player to come out and address this letter to Gavin Newsom. It's like, okay. So he clearly is attached, but then the rumor mill just keeps going, and it makes the most sense because it trains like an NFL athlete already because of his dad and the whole weightlifting thing, you know. So it's just you're right. This is a very interesting wrinkle that Amon-Ra St. Brown is the one who released this initially.
Yeah, it's I mean, it's college football. It's USC football. There's always something interesting going on. We never know what to expect. And this is certainly one of those things where, like, if I had to pick any player that wouldn't have, you know, been the voice of, hey, we want to play, it would certainly been Amon-Ra St. Brown. You know, like, I was like, he's not going to be the one that's going to put himself out there. And how does it look if he opts out for, you know, for the NFL, but he's like the face of going forward as far as like they wanted to play again. So I don't know. My guess would be he's not going to be opting out anytime soon, but, you know, if he can play later and he gets to play six games or something, maybe he just wants to stick around and play those and then go to the NFL. So I don't know, but that was really interesting to me.
Yeah. No, that's a great observation by you. Yeah. No, it's interesting to see what happens, especially because I can understand why the uncertainty must be so frustrating. You know, you're trying to figure out, okay, have I played my last college down? Should I go to the NFL? When is the draft going to be? Are we going to be the only conference that we'll be playing and miss out on the draft? Like, there's so many wrinkles and just issues involved with being a Pac-12 football player right now that I can only imagine what Amon-Ra St. Brown is going through.
Yeah. It's, well, you knew things were going to get heated up once players started watching college football on television. Like, we mentioned that early on. Like, that's what's going to be the big deal here. It's like you sit down on your couch. You're not going to practice. You're not, you know, oh, I got a game tonight, but I can watch the early games. Like, no, you have nothing to do. You might have a Zoom meeting with your position coach or something. And you're sitting on the couch watching, Notre Dame, a team you were going to play this year, play Duke at home. So yeah, that's going to have a profound impact on these college athletes. And you knew that was going to happen. So now that it's happened, this weekend will be a much bigger weekend. And I think once the SEC starts too, it'll be even bigger. You knew that it was going to be frustrating. And that was a well thought out letter that kind of showed the frustration that he and the rest of the players have.
Yeah. I mean, Amon-Ra Amon-Ra St. Brown and Keaton Slovis and Clay Helton did like a roundtable with Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart for like Fox Sports last week. And Amon-Ra St. Brown said as much. And even that was just the week one games, which were a little weird. But he was like, it's so weird. This is the first time in my life I'm not playing football, but I'm watching it. And he was like, I can only imagine how odd it must feel for them. I mean, for me, watching Notre Dame and Duke, I was like, this feels like a bye week. Like, I never am just sitting watching football unless it's a bye week. So I can only imagine how weird it must have been for them, who they trained for this, they love it, and here they are.
Yeah, and here they are, watching on the couch. All right, well, why don't we got some questions. So why don't we take a quick break? We'll come back and answer some questions from the listeners. Back in a minute.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in, the one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
All right, we're back here on the Peristyle Podcast. Keely, looks like we got a pretty full inbox today. What do you got?
So first off, we have an email from Justin in downtown LA who says, "Hey guys, I hope all is well and you haven't inhaled more smoke than you did in your college days." Smiley face.
Nice.
My question is this. My son plays high school football and there are several members of his team that are sports quote unquote holdbacks, i.e. they took a year off between 8th and 9th grade in order to get a year older and focus on training. Some of these kids look like grown men with full beards. What percentage of the recruits that you guys cover graduate at age 19 or even higher? Thanks, Justin in downtown LA.
So, I mean, there's been some guys for sure. You know, JT Daniels was probably the most, famous one or whatever you want to say as far as like well known. There's also guys like Juju Smith-Schuster who was 17 years old in like November of his freshman year, you know? You see it sometimes. I think it's usually specific players. It's not like I don't think this is some widespread that this happens to everybody. But there's certain situations where they want to, you know, a kid might, you know, be mature a little later. They want to give him another opportunity to kind of grow and catch up to his classmates or get a little ahead, whatever it is. But I would say it's not, I mean, it's hard to put a percentage on it, but I would say it's a smaller percentage than something that's like, you know, widely done all over the place. What do you think, Keeler?
Yeah, I don't know the specifics really, just because recruiting is not, I don't dip into that world as much as maybe, of course, it's not as much as Girard or Chris Trevino or Shotgun, but it's funny, Julian Simon, USC's commit, I think it was Greg Biggins put out a story this week, and someone in the comments was like, is that guy 30 years old? Like, the recruits these days just look so old and like so just developed. And I think it has to do with like the 7-on-7s and just the private trainers that recruits are now really investing in. And that's why you see the like Justin Flows of the world, who people called like baby man because he just looks so big. So it's just interesting how it's evolving as far as focusing on training and whatnot.
Yeah, and they're getting a lot more opportunities to showcase their skills in off-season events, especially skill players. There's so many. I mean, there's 7-on-7 stuff going on year-round. It gives quarterbacks a great opportunity to throw the football to a wide range of receivers. We see, you know, receivers playing defensive back and move it around and just getting all kinds of opportunities. And, yeah, there's even more lineman camps and stuff now. So I think some of it is just, you are getting a lot more opportunities to play than you did in the past. It's not just, you know, what you're doing with your high school team. I mean, you have these club teams, these traveling teams, and they're doing stuff they were before the COVID stuff, but they're doing stuff year round. I mean, like the week before signing day, there's like a 7-on-7 event that would happen. And you're like, wait, what? Like, it's signing day tomorrow. It's like, oh no, these are the kids for next year. They're all, you know, they're playing. And
yeah,
it's nuts that, you know, there's not like this downtime as far as recruiting goes, except, you know, unless it's forced by a global pandemic, which is happening.
Yeah, exactly. We have a question from John who said, question for Ryan. It looks like the only real hurdle to USC playing this year is an okay from LA County public health officials. I work with the county government on various business matters, and I know from experience that such an approval won't happen soon unless USC is working at the executive levels with a sense of urgency. Do you know if USC senior leadership is lobbying the county hard to loosen the red tape, i.e. is President Folt in weekly contact with Supervisor Mark Ridley Thomas about this, or is USC simply going through the standard process with mid-level employees in the health department? If it's the latter, then we know that USC leadership is not serious about football. Thank you, John.
And Keely, you probably can answer this better than anyone, but I don't think it's just LA County. I think you like the letter that went out today. It went out to Gavin Newsom. I mean, they need this at the state level. And I think if you get approval at the state level, it will open up things at the different counties. I would have a hard time saying if Gavin Newsom's like, you know what, we want the colleges and California to be able to do this and this. If they have the rapid testing, they can practice, they can lift weights inside, they can have full team meetings, blah, 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 whatever they say. I have a hard time seeing it like Mayor Garcetti going, no, 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 we're not going to let that happen here. Like, I think you're going to the top. But what do you think? Where the USC brass, where are they trying to attack this?
So the interesting thing is, I think the hardest part, so right now you're dealing with LA County, Santa Clara County in the state of California. I think the hardest part will be Los Angeles County. If you look at what USC's doctor said, the university doctor said, I think last week, all of Los Angeles County is having declining COVID-19 rates except for University Park, which is USC's campus. So that's such a huge hurdle for them, because basically, like, in their write-up, you could tell they were a little frustrated by students off campus who are partying and whatnot. And so I think it will be hard to give the okay if you're not seeing declining numbers in that geographical area where USC is located. So I know that USC is partnering with UCLA to write joint letters to the county and to lobby on that front. I don't know how aggressively they're doing that. That's something I can look into more. But I know that they're trying to attack LA County the hardest that they can, and that the state of California is also a hurdle. I think Santa Clara is the least. I think they're a little bit more lenient than what we've seen from other places. So LA County is going to be a hurdle for sure. And I don't know what supersedes, like, as far as importance. So if Gavin Newsom says, everyone go play football right now, will LA County be like, nope, we're still putting this in place and that will stand? I don't know. So that's question marks and a good question from John that I think we still need to dig into.
Yeah, it's funny. Keaton Slovis tweeted at Gavin Newsom too. But he tweeted at Gavin Newsom. Like, if you start a tweet with an at,
yeah,
then only people that you follow and the person you're adding follow would see the tweet. So, but yeah, his last line of the tweet is, "You are the only thing holding us back. Please let us play." So it was a little more accusatory, I think, from him than what we saw from Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Yeah, that's a good find by you. Yeah, no, it's, so I think, yeah, I think if Newsom says, then maybe it'll go that way. We'll see. LA County is interesting at the government level. So
no, it definitely is. But it's not, like, you know, the governor is still the governor. I would think that, you know, that would pull some weight there, but who knows? Maybe we got a battle. Wouldn't that be funny if, like, the governor was like, "We're going to let him play." And the county is like, "No, we can't let him play. We don't watch college football. We're not going to look at the rest of the country. They can't possibly be playing college football anywhere else. We're not going to let this happen." You know, could you see something like that happening? That'd be crazy.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that. I think then you have to pull the, "Well, what are the Rams and Chargers doing" argument, and then kind of really force that issue. But
yeah, the fact that the Rams and Chargers are doing it, like, right down the street, like, there's no way you can't let that. But I mean, who knows? I've said no way before.
Yeah, I mean, you can always argue amateurism, and I think that's the biggest weapon in their arsenal as far as, like, why they're being really strict for colleges. But again, it's just interesting times. You never know. I don't want to say anything for certain because this year has proven that you can't rest on anything for certain.
Nothing certain.
Mm-hmm. I believe we have one final question, and it's from Troy Trojan, who said, "Hello, Ryan. I was watching the Monday night games, trying to forget the current situation of the USC program, but its ugliest aspect, the coaching situation, again reared its ugly head. I did some research, and unbelievably, the 2016 had, wait for it, 14 current players on active rosters across the league. Of those 5, our starters, 2 more additional were cut because of major surgery and 1 placed on a practice squad. 3 more will be draft eligible this year and will be in camp with some team. That's 19 NFL players in all. With that, they suffered one of the worst losses in school history, nearly got blown out in their bowl game, lost 2 Pac-12 games and didn't win the conference. 2016 was a coaching abomination. Question, does the larger USC community really fully comprehend, those who don't follow football, how much of an albatross this man meaning Clay Helton, is on the university, and how much of a joke he is within the football community, NFL and college nationwide?" So Troy Trojan not mincing words there in his email.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can't look at the 2016 so he's not talking about the recruiting class. He's just talking about the
roster. Yes.
The roster from 2016. Yeah. No, there's a lot of dudes there. And, you know, if you look at this list, a lot of the guys that came in, like Sark guys, I mean, Juju Smith-Schuster was a 5-star. Dory Jackson, was a 5-star. You know, Iman Marshall was a 5-star. You know, there's guys that were, you know, absolute studs that they were recruiting at the highest levels. You know, Sam Darnold was a 4-star. You know, Ronald Jones was a big recruit. Porter Gustin, huge recruit. Juma Doga was a 5-star. You know, Zach Banner was a 5-star. Rasheem Green was like a 4 or 5-star. Tyler Vaughns was a 5-star. It's, you know, well, he said going to be in camp in 2021. So he's talking about, yeah, those are guys that were on that 2016 team. You know, Cameron Smith was a big recruit. You know, there's some guys like Deontay Burnett was a Washington State commit until the last minute and blue shirted to USC. And absolutely, you know, they developed him well. He was great. Ichenan Wusu was like a 3-star guy that was like a safety. They moved to linebacker. There were some developmental guys here, but a lot of these dudes, Marvell Tell was a, you know, big recruit. You go down this list, the active roster people, if you say stars don't matter, don't look at that list, because basically anyone that was like a highly recruited guy is playing in the NFL now, you know, and it's pretty clear of what, you know, when you bring in those kind of guys. The problem is the 2020, recruiting class, you don't see any guys that had that kind of star power coming out of high school. That's going to be an issue, going forward. But yeah, you look up and down that list, you're not like shocked, like, "Oh my God, I can't believe Rasheem Green is in the league." Like, no, dude, he was like the best defensive lineman in California when USC got him, or, you know, or Dory Jackson, you know, or Juju Smith. And yeah, it's, I'm not shocked, Keely, looking up and down that list.
No, I mean, you said it will become an issue. If you look at the ABT situation and USC's situation on its offensive line, it is an issue. They have a lot of offensive linemen, but they don't have anyone to replace 3 open spots. And so this is what happens when, and we've talked about this ad nauseum, but this is what happens when you miss out on just years, like multiple recruiting cycles of top offensive linemen, a lot of whom were based in California. This is what happens when now you're staring down three open positions and you're not really sure who's going to step up for that. So it's recruiting is important. That's the main message.
Yeah. And if you remember the year that Dory Jackson and Juju Smith-Schuster signed, it was Sark year. Damon Mama was in that class too, mm-hmm. you know? So if you bring in, if you had a Damian Mama in the class of 2020, okay, maybe he's going to start for you at left guard. Maybe he's going to start for you. Like, basically, there are a bunch of projects that, you know, are going to take a couple years to develop. You needed the Austin Jackson to walk in and be able to play right away. And they missed on all those guys. They missed on all the Austin Jacksons for the last couple of years. And they went to Oregon, most likely. That's a big deal. And you're right. You probably don't have to wait too long for, you know, if they get a Pac-12 gets a football season, you're not going to have to wait too long for the failings of the 2020 recruiting class to rear its ugly head, because they're going to be scrambling, to try to fill out the offensive line. They already were, and they had better pieces, and now you don't, with ABT, you know, going to the league. So, I get it, Troy Trojan. I mean, I think ESPN, we put a story up that, and we reported stuff like this in the War Room too, with the COVID stuff, with the horrible contract that Lynn Swann gave to Clay Helton, the new athletic department, their hands are pretty much tied. And unless it's some huge disaster of a season, there's really not a way you can make a move at the head coaching spot. And, you know, it's not having the opportunity to play Notre Dame or play Alabama. That would have been something that, you know, you could say, oh, look, USC got crushed by this team or that team, or they beat them, you know, and then like that's a feather in Clay Helton's cap. But you would have got more data if you were able to play those games. Now you're not going to be able to. So what are you going to really learn out of the 2020 season? Probably not that much, right? I mean, anything short of winning it is going to be a problem. I think, you know, USC will be the favorite along with Oregon. You know, if they go 3-3 or whatever, like, I don't think that's enough to make some sort of change, just because it's just going to be so expensive to do so. So I get your frustration, Troy Trojan. You are certainly not alone, but all the circumstances and really bad business decisions that were made a couple years back are kind of putting you in this position. And yes, it's inexcusable that USC had those kind of seasons. It's inexcusable that USC went 5-7 with the roster they had, with a bunch of NFL guys on it. Like that should not happen. Like me and Keeley could coach that team and win more than five games. So that's a problem. So I get what you're saying, Troy Trojan, but, unfortunately I don't think there's anything, that can be done about it. I think you want USC to do well. I mean, I think you just got to hope that they run the table and have a great 2020, get a better 2021 recruiting class and go forward and challenge, you know, the Oregons of the world and the Pac-12 going forward. Because right now, Oregon's really dominating on the recruiting front, and USC's done well. They've done a lot better than last year, but Oregon is like, you know, USC came out of the gates pretty strong. Oregon is like piling it on, like their best recruited class ever, and that's not a good thing when a bunch of those guys are people that USC was interested in.
Yeah, there's only so much you can do when your record does not reflect a record that USC should have. It just doesn't help you on the recruiting trail, and Oregon's kind of cleaning up after USC in that sense. So it's kind of just this problem that snowballs on itself. So like when you have a bad recruiting class, maybe you don't play as well, you don't have spots to fill with high level recruits, and then you lose games. You know, it's just a snowball effect that USC really needs to try and pump the brakes on.
Yeah, and you know, it's like, we make decisions in our life every day. Everything you do, I mean, I'm making a decision on which words I'm going to say next, and Keely's going to decide, you know, what she's, you know, going to have for dinner. Like, we're making decisions all the time, and a lot of them are inconsequential, but there's a lot of ones that are major. And sometimes, you know, every bad decision, you don't necessarily know it's a bad decision. You might never know it's a bad decision. You might just miss an opportunity that you wore something out. You wore a t-shirt and jeans to a job interview, and there was some guy that was going to hire you, and he didn't even like interview you because he saw what you were wearing or whatever it is. Like, there's things that you make choices And sometimes you don't know right away the results or what's going to happen. And, you know, you have your check engine light on your car. Like, okay, as soon as it comes on, you don't go to the mechanic. It's not necessarily like a life or death decision. But if you put it off for a long enough time, you're making a bad decision. Now, maybe nothing happens and you're fine, or maybe the car seizes up on the freeway, you know, and you're in trouble. Like, you don't know when those bad decisions are going to be, you know, brought to light. And I think the ironic thing, so many bad decisions have been made by USC administration, like over the years. Like, you know, Pat Hayden made so many bad ones. Lynn Swann basically didn't make any. So he was trying to avoid bad decisions by not making any decisions. But the one he did make, along with, I think, Max Nikias, the president, was a big part of this too. It didn't take long. Like, you knew this was a bad decision within, 7-8 months? Because early in the year of 2018, he gives Clay Helton the extension. And the extension was that we're just learning about now, that it was fully guaranteed, that it was a 40% increase, that it was 5 years added on. And it just was baffling that within, you know, 8 months later, USC went 5-7, and people are calling for Clay Helton to be fired. And Lynn Swann, who wouldn't talk to the media anyway, is sitting on his hands knowing, I just gave this guy 5 years fully guaranteed, and less than a year later, everyone not only wants him fired, but is assuming he's going to be fired. I mean, for that major of a decision to be proven as poor as it was that quickly is just kind of crazy. Like, usually that's a decision like 3 years later, you're like, you're paying for it. Like, USC's paying for it 2 years later, but you knew you were paying for it like 8 months later.
Yeah.
That's
a lot. Yeah. No, I mean, I think anyone who closely paid attention to USC games knew that you probably shouldn't hand a guarantee like that to Clay Helton, but I guess Lynn Swann wasn't. I don't know. You tossed me a dangerous fastball, right? And I don't know if I should swing or not.
No, I mean, you don't have to. I mean, you don't have to agree. That's my own personal opinion.
No, I mean, I completely agree. It's in the past. I mean, USC is just in a pickle in that sense.
Yeah, and the pickle, and then for Troy Trojan, the pickle is, hey, you go back in time and tell Lynn Swann, hey, don't sign that, because that's really going to limit what USC can do going forward. So now it's sort of, it gives Clay Helton that sort of confidence. And we've talked about this before, you know, maybe after signing that extension, he didn't feel any pressure anymore, because, like, I'm here for 5 years. They can't fire me. I'm going to keep my staff together, even though you should make changes. And they didn't. And maybe that extension also hurt the team indirectly, because it gave Clay Helton confidence that he wasn't going to make changes to the staff, that he ended up making major changes in the following 2 years. You know, half the staff got turned over 2 years in a row. He didn't make any changes after getting blown out by Notre Dame and you know, getting smashed by Ohio State, because the team won the Pac-12 championship game. And you look at it that way, you say, well, we won the championship game, I don't need to make changes to the staff. If he didn't get that extension, he's probably making changes to the staff. So that extension by Lynn Swann hurt USC in a lot of different ways. And I don't ever want to get personal with Clay Helton, because people hate it when we say this, he's one of the nicest guys around. He is. We like Clay Helton. We would like Clay Helton to be a successful coach, but we're not going to make excuses and say, yeah, there was no way they could have won more than five games in 2000, 2018?
18, yeah.
No, you're not going to say that, because they should have won a lot more than that. And that's on him. That was, you know, we're going to be honest and say that was, you know, we could be critical of Clay Helton in that situation, but we're not going to be personal about it like some of the, you know, our emails and stuff are.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there are legitimate criticisms against Clay Helton, but when you get personal, it's unbecoming. So we always advocate just be classy, USC.
Yeah. Okay. So Keely, did Big 12, Big 10 announce anything?
I don't think so. I mean, I was paying attention to what you said, but I haven't heard anything.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you mentioned all those players. Zach Banner was one of them, and he was playing in Monday Night Football last night for the Steelers. Actually got to start. Well, I think he was starting at right guard. I mean, right tackle, I believe.
Right tackle, yes.
Yeah, but went down with an injury. I don't remember what the injury is, but it's really unfortunate. It was nice to see him work his way up there and you know, get a start on Monday Night Football. Crazy.
It was a knee injury, and it was awful to see. I mean, I was eating dinner while watching the game, and I look up and they have a shot of Zach Banner crying. And my first reaction was, the last time I saw him crying was at the Rose Bowl win. And I was like, what's happening? And so then it showed that he went down awkwardly on that knee. I think he just put on Twitter that he's going to have knee surgery. So I think he's out for the year, which is awful because Monday night was his first start. He had his first start for the Steelers in 2019 against Cincinnati towards the end of the season, but this was his first start on Monday with a position to call his own. So he worked really hard in the offseason based on the Steelers tweets that I was seeing last night, and just people felt so awful just because he put so much hard work into, getting that starting job, and then now it was cut really short. So our hearts go out to Zach Banner in that, sense.
For sure. Speedy recovery, Zach. He was always one of the cooler dudes you'd want to cover, right? You know, I mean, there's
hilarious, so boisterous.
Yeah, like for as big as he was, like just there was his personality was bigger, you know.
Yeah,
which is that's not easy to do.
No.
All right. Well, I think we should. We've talked enough.
Yeah. No. Good stuff, Ryan.
Yeah. Let's wrap it up. That is Keely Yore. I am Ryan Abraham. We really appreciate you listening to our little show, the Peristyle Podcast. This would be, and hopefully will be, our 13th season covering the Trojans here on the podcast. So it started back in 2008, if you can believe that. But thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next time.
You may have noticed that shopping at Trader Joe's is unlike shopping at other markets. People ask us all the time how we manage to have such unique, interesting, and delicious products at such great everyday prices. This is Dan Bain of Trader Joe's. The answer is simple. It's all in the way we do business. We buy directly from the manufacturer whenever possible. This helps to keep our costs low, and we pass those savings on to you. No gimmicks, just great values at honest prices every day at Trader Joe's. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.
Hello, everyone. It's Michael Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean, outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.